I've got to adjust it for the theme song. And we're on.
Are we on?
We're on.
Oh, my God.
Yep.
It's the Scott and Jane Show.
Welcome to the Scott and Jane Show. Yes, welcome, podcast listeners. Welcome to something different, something new.
I'm still laughing.
You're still laughing. Yeah, this is just like a direct continuation from the last podcast. I'll give everyone the story. So Jane and I had a couple, lots of actually podcast conversations previously. And people seemed to kind of enjoy it. So we thought, hey, let's talk again. But instead of talking about just like me interviewing Jane in her life story, or her interviewing me in my life story, we'll talk about other stuff. So I think, yeah, we're going to give it a go.
We will accept topics.
Yes.
From our vast audience.
Yes, on a postcard, please, if you could send those to somewhere. Yeah.
we'll just see how it goes.
Yeah, we'll see how it goes. So we thought today, as a start, we're going to talk about books.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Books.
Seems kind of appropriate. Jane runs a book club.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I read books every now and again.
and a really good way to, I think if you, I'll start that again. When I go to a town or a city, the library is generally the first place I go to. One, because I like to look at the ladies who work behind the counter. That sounds a bit weird.
It does.
But
sound
they're generally the, like, the, you know, if you can get past the ladies in the library, it's like getting past the reception at a school. You're in. They are fonts of all knowledge. And then there's generally information about what is going on in that town. So I always say, go to a new place. Don't know anyone. Go to the library.
That's true.
Go and talk to someone.
Yeah. It's always like, I've been to so many little tiny places that have enormous libraries and really, there's always characters in the library too.
Yeah.
Like you go, there was a thing I read recently about all these homeless guys who live in the library, or not live, but spend their entire days in the library in Wellington. And they're like encyclopedic knowledge people because all they do all day is read. It's amazing.
Yeah.
That'd be great.
Amazing.
I'd do that.
Yeah.
So I think the plan for today was we were going to talk about our books that really we love and influenced us or something like that. The Desert Island books or something like that.
Desert Island.
So we both independently, and we you know, no exaggeration here, have no idea what books each other is going to talk about.
And it's really hard.
It's really hard.
To choose.
We came up with this idea that we choose like between three and five each, and I have 11.
I have 8.
So pop the jug on. We're going to be here for a while.
Mom, out yeah, there, I know
yeah,
you're listening.
Yeah, hi, Mom. We know there's at least 2 people out there listening. Okay, so, Jane.
Yes.
Book number one.
Book number one, The Wasp Factory by Ian Banks.
Ah.
Ian Banks goes under 2 names, Ian Banks and Ian M. Banks. M. Banks is the science fiction, science fiction books that I've tried. Mm-hmm. I just can't do it. Mm-hmm. It's too hard. My brain hurts. And Ian Banks is his kind of normal fiction, if you can call it that. The Wasp Factory basically looks at a young boy who lives on an island. I think it's off the coast of Scotland. I can't remember. It was a while ago since I read it. I've read it a few times. And starts off with talking about all the people that he's killed.
Right.
So, and then descends into madness.
Wow.
Yeah. It's unbelievably amazing. It's quite very dark.
It sounds like it.
And also starts with his brother, who was in a mental institution, rings him from, he's escaped from the mental institution and he's on his way to find him.
Right.
So he's coming home. And then it kind of starts a whole chain of events. And literally the last page is when you find out what happens.
Oh.
And you kind of brain explodes.
Wow.
Yeah.
That sounds fantastic.
It's awesome.
Is it a recent-ish book?
No, probably I'd say early 80s.
Okay.
Early mid to late 80s. 80s.
Okay.
Yeah. Quite old, but
the title sounds very familiar, but I haven't read it.
Yeah. He makes So he's kind of one of those kids. There is some abusive animals in there,
right.
And he makes this kind of funhouse for wasps. So he creates this funhouse that he puts wasps into, uh-huh. and they have to go through doors to get out, including things like pulling off wasps' wings. Ooh. And all sorts. Yeah, it sounds awful, and it is, but it's amazing.
Wow. So the bee lovers out there might want to.
They will love it.
Right. Right. Mo Rush, this book is for you.
For you.
Yes. Queenstown friend of ours who has an obsession with bees. Did you not know that?
No.
Wow. You learn something every day.
I learn something new every day.
Every day.
Scott Kennedy, number one.
Number one. Okay. I am going to go. I'm going to go with a fairly, probably a reasonably well-known book, especially lately. And it's The Martian by Andy Weir.
Ooh, I started it.
Yes. For those of you who haven't read it, it's a science fiction book about an astronaut who gets stranded on Mars alone and his struggle to survive and sort of live on a planet that doesn't really want him to live there. And they made it recently into a film, which was pretty good.
Yeah.
I thought the film was pretty good. But like lots of people say, I thought the book was better. But just, you know, people always say, oh, the book's better than the movie. But there's so much incredible insight into the headspace of what it would be like to be in this really challenging situation. It's just great. And I think I love the book just as a book, but I also love the story of the book. Because Andy Weir, who wrote it, you read this book and you go, wow, this guy must work at NASA or he must be in the space program or something like that. But he's not. He's just like an enthusiast who's got an interest in this sort of thing. And he did all of his research for this book off the internet, public domain stuff. He figured out all these things on his own. And he didn't get a book deal. He published it on his blog a chapter at a time,
wow.
like a chapter a week. And people read it like an episodic thing, like the newspaper, how in the olden days things used to go. And eventually people are like, wow, I really want this as a book. And then he packaged it up and sold it on Amazon independently without ever a book deal. And it became this worldwide sensation.
Amazing.
Yeah.
And Matt Damon, good choice?
See, it's interesting because when I read the book, I'd heard that they were going to make a movie out of it with Matt Damon. So
did you run screaming?
No! No, Matt Damon. I always had Matt Damon in my head as that character, as the picture in my head, and I kind of couldn't shake that. But a lot of the other characters from the book to the movie were significantly changed,
yeah.
Nationalities and stuff like that. So that was that sort of turned it on its head a bit. But yeah, it's a fantastic adventure read and a real, you know, up until 4 a.m. page turner. So good read, I'd say.
Good choice.
All right. Jane Guy.
I'm going to go one of our favorites, 11/22/63.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
So good.
So Stephen King. I got into Stephen King only a couple of years ago. I know people are screaming out there. Because I thought, ugh, horror, no way. But honestly, he is the master. Amazing. This book is slightly different from the usual horror that he writes. There's a little bit of it in there, but it's just, I cancelled meetings to finish it. I was like, I can't leave the house. And I've told everybody who's kind of asking for a book to read if they're going on holiday, or it's quite a thick read. Mm-hmm.
But it goes fast, though.
Just amazing. It's just so good. And I'll probably read it again. And then they've made it into a series,
apparently. Like an 8-part series of it, and I think James Franco is the main character.
Yeah, interesting.
Which is interesting. I he wasn't how I pictured the main guy in my head.
Yeah. Do you, when you're reading a book, imagine it as a film and who you would play those people, or do you not do that?
I do, to me, I'm always thinking of it as a movie, and I kind of can't not do that.
Yeah.
And I think it's like I draw comparisons to actors for the characters in the book and go, oh, who would I have play that? That's sort of how my head works, but I can't kind of, but then you can't undo it.
No.
Yeah. Which, yeah, it's a bit of a challenge, but that book was amazing.
It is amazing.
I think one of the things I really loved about it is it talks a lot about time travel, but most time travel books deal with the mechanics of time travel a lot, but this is just time travel.
And it seems really normal.
Yeah.
Like, oh yeah, that's what you do.
Yeah.
You can do that tomorrow.
Exactly.
It's fine.
Yeah. You know, it's like all of Back to the Future is all about the mechanics of time travel. This isn't like that at all. You just go down a set of steps and you're in 1959 something. But a fantastic read. I think if you're a Stephen King fan, you'll love it.
Yeah.
And if you're not a Stephen King fan or haven't read his stuff, it's a great way in.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
So yeah. I'll give like an asterisk, a follow-on recommendation. There's the Stephen King book that I'd recommend is actually called On Writing. And it's he wrote a nonfiction book about his writing process.
Jane gets it down on a piece of paper.
Yeah. We are recording this.
Oh, yeah. I can listen again. I'm not trying to type it into my phone. On right. Oh, no, I don't have to do that.
Yeah. No, it's a fantastic read because it's all about his process and how he became a writer and just the discipline that he has to be a writer is really, really interesting. And you can sort of see how he can churn out so many books just the way he works.
Yeah.
So if you're any writers listening out there or people interested in the process of writing books, I highly recommend that one.
I will have a look at that one.
Right. So I guess, it's my...
it's you.
It's me again. I had to reach down and grab it. My second choice is a book by Cormac McCarthy called The Road. Oh, so good.
So good.
So good.
I bawled my eyes out.
This book messed me up.
Yeah, my friend too.
It was full on. It is... It's a dystopian post-apocalyptic book about there's just a few people left in the world and they're doing the best to survive. And it is so bleak. So bleak. So
a friend of mine read this book, a male friend of mine, and he was reading it near the end and bawling his eyes out. And the plumber came round and found him and said, dude, like, what's going on? And
he just went... together.
Read The Road, and it totally messed him up.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's kind of unrelenting. There's no chapters in it. There's very little punctuation, and it just reads as one long.
Yeah.
You know what are we? There's not even page numbers on this.
No.
Oh, 285 page chapter. But the writing is just exquisite. It's so beautiful and so told in such simple terms. Like it feels like a Hemingway novel.
And I think you should really, really read the book before the film. I actually like the film.
Yeah.
Friends of mine hate the film and then therefore won't read the book. And I say, shake them and say, please read the book.
Yeah.
Because the book's just beautiful.
Yeah. There's an amazing stark beauty in the book that, I mean, the film was a good telling of the story, the book, but to me, it doesn't even come close.
No.
I'm not usually a stay up all night and read a book person, even though both books I've talked about have been in that terms. But I literally read that book in one go.
So we've had horror, dystopian nightmares that mess us up, and pulling wings off bees.
Yeah.
Awesome.
I really hope it gets nicer.
Anyway, moving along.
Jane Guy.
High Fidelity by Nick Hornby. Now, I'm not a massive fan of Nick Hornby. I don't really like any of his other ones, but I saw the film and then read the book.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably one of my favorite films too. Mm-hmm. I don't care how smarmy or cheesy it is. I absolutely love it.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that the film's American and this is set in London, they are very different, but I think work very well across both genres.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think the thing that really stuck out for me in the whole book is that thing of you meet someone, you fall in love with somebody and it's all sexy and wonderful, and then they bring out their pants from Marks and Spencer's that are old and grey.
Mm-hmm.
And they end up hanging on the washing line in the front room, and then you have that kind of I think we all every so often have that thing of that fantasy of what it either used to be or see somebody else in that light. And I think he talks a lot about the fact that at the end of the day, you know, you're with somebody for a long time and you're walking down the street and you see this model and you have this fantasy about this person. But actually they will turn into that person with mm-hmm. the grey underpants in the front room eventually.
Yeah.
So the fantasy's not real. And actually it's fine to have fantasy, but it's not real.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I would say more so men than women.
Mm-hmm.
And he talks a lot about it from a male perspective, into that the fact that actually just look at what you've got,
yeah,
and how wonderful that is.
Yeah, and I think they use music in that book,
yeah,
and the film, because I'm sure a lot of people have seen the film, but the love of music and the metaphor of the organization of music and all that sort of stuff. Like we were making all these high fidelity references. You know, I had no idea Jane was going to talk about this book, but this whole podcast was based upon, you know, top five.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's, yeah, it's this, you know, this idea of looking back and appreciating what, you know, what you had in the past and, you know, transferring that to appreciating what you have in the future.
And he also talks about, you know, he owns a record shop, but he's actually really grumpy, not very cool, bad diet, smokes a lot, all that kind of stuff. And his mum still rings him up and goes, "What are you doing with your life?"
Yeah.
And he's like, "I don't know."
I know. I think is the one thing I didn't like about the film is John Cusack made him far too cool.
Yeah.
Like it's.
Yeah, yeah, I know what you mean.
You know,
I love John Cusack though. So for me, it was like, bingo.
Yeah. Yeah. No. Great.
Yeah.
Great. Right.
Oh God, I'm dreading what's coming next.
I am going to talk about actually one of my favorite authors, who's a contemporary, mostly magazine writer, but a guy called Chuck Klosterman. And one of my favorite books of his is called I Wear the Black Hat. And Chuck Klosterman is he writes for all sorts of different magazines. He's for Vanity Fair and Rolling Stone. And he has this amazing cross-section of knowledge about pop culture, but talking about frivolous pop culture things in a really intellectual kind of way. Some people might have seen him. There's a concert film about LCD Sound System called Shut Up and Play the Hits, mm-hmm. and he sort of narrates that film, and the backbone of that film is an interview he's doing with those guys, and he's got this incredible voice that just rings to me, just rings in my brain as the voice of our sort of post-Generation X digital world. I think he's the voice of that generation.
Yeah.
So he's written a whole bunch of books. Most of them are collections. But I Wear the Black Hat is probably one of my favorites of his.
Sounds awesome.
Yeah. Definitely recommend him.
Okay. Ooh, who should I go next? The Shipping News by Annie, and I can never say her last name.
Prue.
Prolx.
Yep.
The Shipping News has to be made into a film. With Kevin Spacey, no, does not, should not
no,
be that
should
person.
Not be in that film.
Basically talks about a guy who, overweight, doesn't know what he's doing, failed relationships, has two children. His wife dies. It's fine. It's not ruining the story. But she, and he takes them away to Newfoundland.
Yep, Newfoundland.
And basically the whole book is about him kind of struggling to find where he should be living. And he has this crazy family of, you know, kind of lots of people join his family in inverted commas. And it's cold. The whole story is about being cold, and yeah. It makes you cold reading it.
Yeah.
You know, he's in this place that's harsh and that it's wet and it rains a lot. And he learns how to sail a boat, and his children are these two, like, complete, they're called Bunny and Sunshine, I think, can't remember. Anyway, and they get into lots of trouble. And you can imagine them having, you know, losing socks and hairs everywhere and crazy. And he's just trying to be a dad and make it up as he goes along. But it's just the most beautifully written. And there's a whole, sailing theme runs mm-hmm, through it. Mm-hmm. So there's knots and how to learn how to make knots. And
yeah.
It's just such a beautiful, beautiful book.
Yeah.
It's so beautiful.
I loved it as well. Yeah. I thought it was just amazing. And as you say, it was like really, it puts you in that scene. Like you felt like you were, you know, on this cold Atlantic coast with the wind coming off the ocean and all that. And it's, yeah, it's just stunning.
Yeah, it's such a beautiful book. But then they made it and gave Kevin Spacey the role, and it's just wrong.
Yeah.
It's so wrong.
Because she wrote Brokeback Mountain as well, didn't she?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is, it's just a great read, actually.
Yeah. we say with a slight smirk.
Well, it's funny because I read that book well before the film ever came out.
Yeah.
And got a hell of a surprise about the third way through.
As did my mum.
It's like, oh, it's a couple friends going camping. Oh, whoa, no, whoa.
Whoa.
Yeah, but a beautiful book.
Yeah,
really, like, and that's, you know, yeah, another beautifully minimalist character study where it just tells you in sort of flashes about what these characters are about, and just so passes on this sense of sadness.
You can never ever say to anyone again, can we go camping for the weekend, with the same look on your face.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No.
No.
Great read. Okay, I think it's my turn. My next book is by Amanda Palmer, and it's called The Art of Asking.
Yes.
A fantastic book by a musician, cultural sort of phenom, which is Amanda Palmer. She's been around for a long time making music, and has a really interesting story of reaching some mid-level indie success, and then writing in it with a band called the Dresden Dolls, and then writing a solo album that the record company decided they didn't really like, and they didn't promote her or it at all, and her career kind of went into the tank, unfortunately, and she, instead of doing like a lot of artists would have done, which is just kind of fade away, she took ownership over everything, literal ownership and figurative ownership, became an independent, and forged a new way of being a professional artist in a time when people don't buy records, which is basically her going out to people and saying, hey, I'm going to make this art, and if you like it, give me some money. And it's her story of this changing world about how, if we're not buying music or not buying art anymore, how do artists survive? And it's a really interesting book, and she's a very polarizing figure. Some people love her, some people hate her. Some people think she just has an agenda. But it's just a very interesting insight into the modern way of being an artist, and how it's changed, and how she's sort of charted a course through it. So fantastic read. She did a great TED talk.
I was going to say, is it similar?
Yeah. It kind of takes the idea from her TED talk and expands it into a book form.
Yeah.
And just colors in a lot of the details around it. So if you've seen her TED talk, it sort of follows on from that. If you like or listen to her music, it definitely fills in the stories around that. But it's an interesting stamp of time. It'll be interesting to see if that her story stands the test of time.
Yeah. It is very cool. Listen to the talk.
Yeah.
Awesome.
No, definitely. Definitely a good one. Definitely worth checking out.
A recent new mum.
Yes.
Which I think has kind of, I don't say tone her down, but
yeah,
she's not got crazy eyebrows anymore.
No, she's like got painted on eyebrows. Crazy. She's married to Neil Gaiman, who's like an amazing writer as well.
No, I didn't know that. Oh my God.
Yeah. Can you imagine?
Can you imagine living with him?
Yeah. Can you imagine that household? How crazy it would be. And can you imagine having like one of the most successful authors of the last 20 years be your partner and be like, hey, I'm going to write a book?
Oh, really? We'll see how that goes. I imagine in that household, it's like, what do you want for dinner? And somebody just goes, triangle.
Yeah. It feels very shag carpet today. Yeah, and just like people just standing in the middle of the room holding a hardcover book and just reading from it.
It's my normal existence. Every night for me.
That's right.
Totally. My next one is We Are Not Ourselves by Matthew Thomas. I think it's quite a new read. Mm-hmm. It's massive, I will warn you. Mm. It's huge. And I think probably released, I'd say, about 3 or 4 years ago. Somebody's going to ring in because we've got a switchboard.
Hold on. Caller. Line one. We'll put
line
you on.
Somebody's going to say no, he's not, but I think he's American. Anyway, I love American writers and I love American story writers. And basically it starts from about the 50s and kind of works its way up to about now. And it's all based around one family. Mm-hmm. and a very, very clever science dude who was a teacher, and it's his demise into Parkinson's.
Oh, wow.
It's really amazing because it's such a huge book. It's really slow. Mm-hmm. So it shows the fall of him. It's very sad. Mm-hmm. And his wife and his son and the relationships around being around this woman being kind of a 50s mother and mm-hmm. wife, into her trying to find out who she actually is. Wow. Now, and it's amazing, and some of it's quite funny in that it shows his kind of him losing it, I suppose you would say, mm-hmm. And the kind of the funniness around that, but also the real sadness around what that looks mm-hmm. like. Mm-hmm. His kind of standing in society and how people just think he's going mad because mm-hmm. they didn't really understand what that was. Mm. But it's a it's a very long book.
Wow.
But it's slow. You have to really stick with it. Yeah. But it's amazing.
Sometimes those like slow burn books are just amazing.
I left it and went back to it because it was.
Yeah.
But I was like, no, I'm going to really stick.
It's amazing when an author can hold your interest in like the slow burn book that's like, you know, thousands of pages
long. Do you put up with a book? Do you have to finish it? Or are you I can't do this. It's fine.
I've given up on lots of books.
Yeah. I find that really hard.
Yeah. I get to a point where I'm like, I really don't want to read this anymore. I'm going to give myself like one more chapter.
Yeah.
And that's like the ultimatum. And it's got to get better. Yeah. But I've had that experience so many times where I've like, I'm going to give up on this book. I can't deal with it anymore. And then the next chapter is like amazing.
Yeah.
And then you can't stop.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't have a problem giving up books.
No.
And I'll get into stages where I'll get into like a real streak of reading where I'll read like two or three books at a time. And I'll read like a fiction book and a nonfiction book at the same time. And it's like, to me, it's like watching different TV programs or something like that.
Yeah. What's the one, the motorcycle that's written about philosophy?
Oh, Zen and the Art of
I've literally started it 10 times and stopped.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because it's amazing, and then I think it just goes to shit.
Yeah, I've read the first part of that book a lot.
Yeah.
And then I don't think I've ever gotten through it.
No, I haven't.
And it's kind of like, it reminds me of, there's a book called Sophie's World.
I was just going to say that.
Yeah.
I couldn't get through that either.
Amazing. Like the first five chapters, you're like, this is amazing. I'm learning philosophy. I'm learning all this. Because it's this sort of metaphor for learning about philosophy based upon this like secret guy who's sending this girl, Sophie, letters, and she reads the letters about philosophy. I think that's what it was.
Yeah, I can't remember.
It's been a while.
I think I was too young when I read it.
Yeah, I think I was like, it was one of those books I really wanted to read, but I wasn't quite ready for it. Like, I tried reading Brief History of Time in, like, junior high school. Don't do that.
Don't do that, kids.
Yeah. Although I do remember when I was, I had a job as a summer camp counselor when I was in high school, and when the kids couldn't sleep at night, I would read them Brief History in Time. And like,
they were like, no, Mr. Kennedy.
No. And like 5 minutes later, they'd all be asleep because I'd be like talking about the equations of black holes and stuff like that. I'd have no idea what I was talking about, but they were bored to death. It was perfect.
Now they're all drug addicts.
Exactly.
You turn them to drugs.
Or astrophysicists.
Oh, yeah. Or the other.
One or the other.
Yeah.
One or the other. Okay. Go on. My next book. Sorry, that it looks better if you see it, but I just reached down and grabbed it. Keeping with the slightly dark, chewy subject matter is
seen the front cover.
Imperial Ambitions by Noam Chomsky.
That's my head exploding.
Yeah. Noam Chomsky he's actually a linguist professor at MIT in the States. But he's kind of globally known as a writer on modern politics and history. And basically an intellectual is probably the best way of describing it. Talks a lot about politics, lots about history, especially American politics and foreign policy and war. But he's an incredibly smart guy. Very, very smart. And he sort of analyzes things in a very kind of intellectually nerdy kind of way, and it sounds like I'm describing like a textbook that you didn't want to read, but it's incredibly well written. It's a lot of it's from a very left wing perspective on what America's done in a foreign policy kind of way. So if you're interested in politics, if you're interested in the political process that's going on right now, and you're what
everyone is at the minute,
I think everyone is too, and it's like it's very interesting. Some stuff like Howard Zinn stuff is kind of similar. What's his face from Australia? Whose name will come to me in a moment.
Jason Donovan.
Yes. Yes, that's the one.
hit the nail on the head.
Yeah, John Pilger, that's the one.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So it's kind of along those sort of lines, but not quite as doom and gloom.
Yeah, yeah. That's hard, heavy stuff.
Yeah, it's still pretty heavy, but it's kind of vaguely optimistic, and pretty accessible. Like it defines or analyzes stuff in an easy to understand kind of way. So it's definitely your intellectual vegetables for today, but a good read for sure. Any of his books, but Imperial Ambitions is the one I pulled off the shelf for today.
Awesome. I'm gonna go one more.
Okay.
Because I've only got one more. I've actually got three, but I'm gonna pick one out of them. I'm gonna pick Tracks by Robin Davidson. Mm-hmm. Tracks is about and again have just made a film out of it, a lady who set in Australia, and she leads camels over the I think it's the west coast of Australia.
Okay.
Basically learns how to rear camels, trains them, yeah, and then takes them on a journey across Australia.
Wow.
And all the stuff that happens across, it's a true story. Wow. It's crazy bonkers. I read it in just before I went and did my year in Australia back in 2002-1 or something. Mm-hmm. Anyway, it's kind of a, you read it and kind of go, whoa. It reminds you and kind of shows you of the state of Australia, mm-hmm, back then. Mm-hmm. And actually how remote it was. Mm-hmm. Parts of Australia still are really, yeah, so remote.
Yeah.
Particularly the middle parts.
Yeah.
And all the stuff that's happening around there. Mm-hmm. And it's lots of photographs in there. And she was just kind of one of those lost souls who didn't really know what she was doing and just said, I'm going to do that, and mm-hmm, went and did it. Just an amazing story of all the people that she met along the way. And actually the story of those camels who became her family, they've all, mm-hmm, got names. They've all got personalities, massive personalities.
Oh, wow.
And they're really grumpy animals.
Yeah.
And just the story of the time that she spent on her own with them.
Oh, cool.
And it's an amazing book. And I think last year made a film of it. And the lady who played her I can't pronounce her last name, but I'll know her if I see it. Anyway, mm-hmm, but amazing book. Okay. Amazing book.
Cool.
Really cool.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah.
Check that out. It sounds really interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll go my last, okay, one as well. I'm gonna skip over all of the low hanging fruit, which is George Orwell and the John Krakauer. And the Jack Kerouac, because they'll just get those in there.
Yeah.
But I'm going to talk about a book called How Music Works by David Byrne. And David Byrne is in Talking Heads, David Byrne.
Yeah.
And he's written this amazing book about basically how music works and how not only the music industry works, but more music itself. And it's a really interesting kind of deep dive into why we connect to music and why it's important to us, and also around the context of music, which I found just endlessly fascinating. And I think it's one of the only books I've ever read on an iPad that really suits reading in a digital format, because it'll be chapters about certain pieces of music, and you can listen to the music at the same time as you're,
wow,
reading the chapter.
Amazing.
Yeah, so it's this beautifully augmented thing, and it's, you know, he talks a lot about how all different types of music have a context, and when it's taken out of context, it doesn't sound right. So if you listen to music, like choral music that sounds beautiful in a cathedral, if you listen to it on your headphones, it doesn't sound quite right. But if you listen to it in a cathedral, it sounds amazing. And you know, there's a spirituality to that type of music because of where it's listened to. And it's the same way that if you listen to punk rock music in a grungy basement somewhere sounds amazing,
yeah,
but if you listen to it in
your
car,
house,
yeah, it just doesn't sound right. So, you know, everything in its context sounds exactly the way it should. And most of the time when we listen to music now, it's out of the proper context. So we're listening to stuff on Spotify or on our phone or something like that, and that's not the way it should be listened to. So if we sort of start putting music back in the place that it's supposed to be, which is you know, not multitasking, not checking your email, not doing something else, not washing the dishes at the same time, but sit down and actually listen in the way it was meant to be listened to, it kind of regains a lot of the power that it once had.
Amazing.
Yeah, it's a great book, really great book. And he tells a bit of his own story and a bit of the story of the Talking Heads, but it does not matter if you like their music or a fan at all. If you're a fan of music, you'll connect to music in a completely different way. So
perfect.
Read and listen.
We'd love to hear your listeners.
That's right.
Your books that you want to spread around. I will give you, so my book club meets once a month, just for people out there. It's all women, but we've never said no men, so you're welcome to join. Basically, the way it works is we meet in person once a month together, and then we meet online about 2 days later with the rest of the world. So there's probably around 2,000 of us that meet every month.
Fantastic.
Yeah, and so we meet on a Facebook page, which is really easy, and the author also is there with us. So she's either at, he or she is either at, literally at the book club in London, where go from, or they join us online if they can't get there.
So how does that go if people, what if people aren't liking the book?
You can be completely honest, and we in Queenstown are known as the controversial book club.
Really?
Because we often, it's quite funny actually, because sometimes at the night we're like, we sound like we want to say, you know what, we'll show you, we'll tell you how you should have written your book.
Sit down.
Yeah, sit down while you listen to us. But the response from the authors has been really great, because they've said, we don't want people to just pander to the fact that they love it if they hate it.
Yeah.
We'd actually love to hear what you really thought about it and about the characters that you, and what you wish we'd have done and what we did really well. And for them, the process, I think, is really helpful.
And I think, you know, process is a really important word when we're talking about books and writing, because it's, you know, there's very few authors who only write one book.
Yeah.
They're always in the process of the process, you know, and it's like if they finish, by the time somebody reads a book that they've written, they probably wrote it 2 years ago. They're on to the next project, or maybe the project after that.
Yeah, and it never feels mean. It never feels like a mean thing, you know, experience for them. And a lot of the stuff you learn, things like they often don't choose the front cover, because a lot of us go, God, the book was amazing, but the front cover was awful.
Yeah.
And they're like, I know.
Yeah.
We had no control over that process.
Yeah. It's from a filmmaking perspective, there's a really similar analogy to that, where the filmmakers don't choose the poster, they don't make the trailer, they don't do any of that stuff.
Yeah.
So we make all these preconceived ideas about films that has nothing to do with the artist who actually made it.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's awesome. It's really awesome. And they're all over the world. So we've got England, Ireland, Australia, Paris, New Zealand, Iraq. We have to smuggle the books in, apparently. They have to be sent to someone.
Wow.
And it's just a really, really awesome community of people who are reading and talking and meeting together. So, get in touch with Queenstown Life if you want to join. Mm. Anyone's welcome to join.
And what sort of books do you guys read?
We've been reading a lot of first-time authors, which has kind of gone... I struggle with constantly reading first-time authors.
Yeah.
My friend who's organised the book club has done is sit down with a panel of people from all over the world of the book clubs and has said, what do you think which way should we go?
Yeah.
So the next kind of 6 months... The panel has now picked, which includes lots of different types of authors.
That's cool, because I mean, the first-time authors is a really interesting way of looking at it. And there's a great Winston Churchill quote that every author's first book is an autobiography, whether they want it to be or not. And you know, because people write about what they know, and they write about themselves.
Yeah.
So it's like it's an entire lifetime going into this one book, and which can make it very interesting. And I really like to read author's second book.
Yeah.
Because it's like, what do they follow that up with?
Yeah, yeah.
And there's a sort of a sweet spot in there.
Yeah. So it's cool. And we just meet once a month. And you know, you can be online or in person or both. Really easy.
Cool.
And yeah.
And what are you guys reading now?
We are reading Curtain Call by Anthony Quinn, which I haven't started yet. And I've got a week to read it.
No problem. What are you doing here? You should be reading.
Speed reading. Yeah.
Well, just get the book on tape.
Yeah.
So okay. Here's a book question for you. Are you a physical read the book person?
I have both. I have a Kindle that I've just bought. I do like a physical book turner. I do struggle with Kindle, but they're amazing.
Yeah.
You know?
I don't have a Kindle, but I read a lot on my iPad.
Yeah.
which has the light going into your eyes thing.
That's not good.
Which is not good. But I like a lot of people, I read in bed.
Yeah.
And the books really annoy me in bed, like the physical turning the pages.
And it hurts your arms.
Yeah,
and
you got to hold it like above your head, yeah, and all that sort of stuff. Where the digital book, to me, is a nicer process.
Yeah.
So, but there is something, you know, like the How Music Work books that I was talking about today. That's really nice to have in a digital format, yep, because of what it adds to it.
Yeah.
But there's, like, as I was pulling a lot of these books off the shelf to talk about today, I was just reminded of the smell of books, like being by the big bookshelf and just smelling the.
I've got a really bad image of you, like, sniffing books in Wakefield.
I was just like, just sort of, if you can imagine, arms just sort of wide, just moving back and forth along a bookshelf. It's. Yeah, there's a reason why this is a podcast.
You don't need the visuals, people. Visual.
But thanks for listening, everybody. Yeah. Get in touch if you have books that you think we should read or other people should read, or
things that we should talk about.
Things we should talk about, because this is not a books podcast. No. This is an everything podcast. Yeah. So, give us some ideas.
I think we do vodka next time.
Yes. Yes.
Tasting.
There was a column I was going to write for a magazine one time that was going to be called Six Beers With ... And it was an interview that went along, that basically we'd ask a question after each beer.
Yeah.
And by the time you got to the sixth beer, we're getting to the good stuff.
Yeah.
But no one wanted to be interviewed for it. Surprise, surprise.
I'm there.
All right. So join us next time.
Join us next time. Where's your xylophone?
We need hold on.
And music. We'll see you next time, people. Hang on, we're still here.
Bye.